Cutting in on the MC5 for just a second here to say goodbye. Dennis Thompson has died. The MC5 no longer exists at all. This is a Dennis Thompson tune from High Time. Gotta Keep Moving. We heard Alice Coltrane do an excerpt from Igor Stravinsky's The Firebird from Lord of Lords. We heard John Oswald's Plunderphonics doing Igor Stravinsky's Spring. We heard Gorky Zygotic Monkey doing Punchref Luthia Moore. We heard Dr. Strangely Strange doing Dr. Dim and Dr. Strange. Twin Atlas did Your Favorite Times Are New. My name is Scott, and I look forward to seeing you next week, my friends. Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope, New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned. Miracle Nutrition's coming your way with Hardy White. Bye.
This is Miracle Nutrition. with Hardy Wide. I'm Hardy Wide. Miracle Nutrition. I wish I was in a smooth jazz group. Smooth. And everything we do would be smooth. Our lives would be smooth. All our records would be so smooth, there would be nothing on them. Because there'd be no grooves, just smooth. But no grooves doesn't mean grooveless. Smooth is one big groove. Smooth records. I wish every Bob was Bob James. I wish it was all smooth. I wish Diodato did not only covers of Richard Strauss, but all German music. Wagner, but also Heino. Smooth Heino. All of it smooth. Yes, I wish I was in a smooth group. That doesn't mean it would be bland and not inventive. You know what's smooth? Top of my head, mountains. They call mountains that are bald, bald, and bald people, mountain heads. I wish everything made you feel relaxed and at ease. Our music would say there's no need to be uptight because things are smooth, smooth sailing, the smooth taste of cigarettes. Smooth sounds like soothe. People don't say the word sucker anymore because it has too many homophones. I love you. Smooth. I'll tell you what isn't jazz. Carpet. Not much jazz about that. And yet I have laid upon many a carpet and listen to beautiful music being played, sometimes all around me, because I will fall asleep in the middle of a smooth jazz group that is assembled in a circle like shape note singers. You could conceivably do shape note singing as jazz swingle singers arrangements. A cappella Ron Hicklin singers singing shape note jazz. The sacred harp, chromatically played. Yeah. I'll tell you what's pentatonic, my hand. Everything else contains all the notes. Music is a spectrum. There are two ways of getting to the other side of a mountain. You can go over it. You can go through it. And you can go around it. And you say, oh, that's three ways. I say, no. It's two ways, and then a third thing. One of them is not a way. A way is more than a description of a solution. Welcome, my friends. You are listening to the only You've heard of word jazz. Indeed. Yes, you have. But have you heard of smooth word jazz? That's where it's word jazz. You just use fewer words or something. You don't really do anything that's too out there. Oh, my goodness. I like to think of myself like that. If I was playing, let's say, the saxophone and not the human voice. Well, that saxophone's a terrible comparison because that sounds nice and it's a tempered instrument, which means it usually plays in tune unless you're very bad at it. But let's see, what's my voice like? Slide whistle or something like that. Or a trombone, but there's things living in it. Who knows? A mucusy trombone. Oh, they should make a law about making trombones out of human flesh. I don't know if there's a law against that. You'd be surprised how few laws there are prohibiting things that haven't been imagined yet. Apparently, you have to imagine a thing first, and then you can fear it. But first, you have to think of it. Oh, my goodness, we can think of so many. That's why your imagination is... Here, you have a lot of people like Mr. Rogers saying, use your imagination. And I'm here to say, hold on a minute. Careful. Okay? Because, you know, that's like saying, just go into that woodworking shop and make a thing. I'm here to say there are so many things that can cut off your fingers just in your imagination. And, oh, so many ways to hurt yourself without even leaving the house. I remember there's a lot of 60s music like that when the Beatles were taking drugs and going to India and everything and meeting international charlatans because they'd only met local ones before. You know, hey, governor, and then you become, that stops working. You have to go outside of the country to be able to be tricked anymore. So anyway, there was George Harrison or one of them. It might have even been on the cartoon. I'll get to that in a minute. But a lot of I conflate the real Beatles with the cartoon Beatles, and that's so dangerous to do. But he said you can go places without traveling, really, which is baffling why he bothered to do it, because India, my goodness, you've got to have shots even. But he said, you could have just stayed home in your safe house. You can go places then in your imagination. So what I say is that I bet... You know, if you're traveling in your imagination, please know that there are travel advisories out for certain destinations, even in your imagination. It's not a safe place. You say, oh, it's perfectly safe. That's the view of a child. Remember when we were young and we just get in the car with our parents and think, this is safe? Oh, never get in the car with your parents. Who knows who they are? You don't, especially you've just been with them such a short while, you haven't gotten to see the arc of their lives. They could be... You have no idea who these people are, but you just follow them around, whatever, willy-nilly. That's why I have the island for adventurous boys, I call it, and we play pool and turn into donkeys and things like that and smoke cigars, which is the big lure. I think about that Pinocchio scene. I think nowadays the young man would be like, I don't know about the cigars. I don't know if that's really what lures me. Every once in a while, the kids want to smoke cigars, and it's kind of silly looking back. I don't know which generation I was in, but the islands nowadays have to be a little more sophisticated, I think. They'd have to have more electronic things, not just pool. So I don't know how you learn, or even if people turn children into donkeys anymore. I'm so old. Things have changed now, especially. Now I'm talking about the world of imagination. You say, what are you going on about, Hardy? I'm saying your imagination is fraught and dangerous. At least get some kind of psychopomp Rick Steves or something. I realize you have to be dead to have a psychopomp, but it's good to hire one now, someone to guide you to the underworld. But through your imagination, who can be your guide? I wonder who that could be. Who could I think of that would make a really wonderful guide of the imagination while you were still alive? Who could that possibly be? I honestly don't know. I'm stumped. But it would be wonderful to have one. And because, like I said, there's dangers. You know, you can't just say, oh, I think I'll just go to, trying to think of an unsafe country, Schmoland or something like that. I'm always going to pick a fake one. Because a real one, you don't want to hurt their feelings. So like a made up one, like Romania, someplace like that. So, oh, it's a bad time to go there now because vampire season. And he said, well, I heard they speak a romance language. Is it easy to learn? And I always say, Dragostone Dente. And they said, what are you talking about? And I go, if you don't know what that means, you're hopeless. I think it means linden tree. I'm not exactly sure. Oh, bless you. I want you to explore. Yes, I want you to think and be curious. But let's explore this outside world, the inside world. Who knows what's in there? And so many of us are a mystery to ourselves. And if you're going to start to say, well, I want to look into this mind palace I have. I've been neglecting it. You inherited it. It's in there. It's guiding your entire world. It's this weird house with things in it that you've accumulated. And a lot of people don't explore it. Why? Because there's rotting corpses in it, psychologically speaking. So you go, there's some rooms in my head I don't want to go in. I'm just frightened. A lot of my memories, I know they're there. I always say things like, oh boy, I don't remember that period of my life. Oh Lord, do I? I'm just trying to convince myself I don't, because I don't want those memories to just pop in like they know me and just visit, say, hey, we're here. Remember us from the 80s? Go, oh God. I'm going to vomit. Not everything was pleasant, and you wish you could forget some things. Time takes care of some of it. But there's ones that they'll visit you, and you can tell they're visiting people because you'll just be sitting with somebody, and they'll go, you go, oh, I know that feeling. I know that sigh. I know who just came to see you is Uncle Regret. He's here, from the old country. That's what I call the past. And we left the old country trying to get away, make a fresh start here in the now. And I don't want to go to the future because I know I'm not going to make it. So I just, well, I guess you will. No one ever makes it to the future. It always evaporates. And so if you live for it, you're going to be disappointed. I hate to tell you. This is why I'm so offended by movies that are series. Like, I saw The Lord of the Rings and I'm glad that I didn't die. But I felt after the first one, like, this is, to be continued in two more movies. I go, I'm going to die. I'm not even that interested in it. I just know now. I'm going, oh, I look forward to that. That's that. The God of irony hears that and say, oh, he's looking forward to something. When is it? In December. Kill him dead in November. It always happens. So I try not to. The hard thing for me is planning. Now, that's, I had to do a show, up in New Jersey. And to plan, you must use your imagination. You have to imagine a thing before it happens. Now, I barely want to do the actual thing. So having to live through it a few times in the holodeck of my cranium is very stressful, I think. So you go, oh, I lived through all. So I lived through the one where I'm nude and crying, which you never, but I have to take that into, what would happen to get to that place that I don't want to be? And so I have to consider all those things. And it's so funny, you go, well, that couldn't happen. I remember being next to a nude and crying Ken one time because he had done some stunt or something for the marathon. He wasn't completely nude, but he was in like skivvies and covered with feathers or something and shivering. And I feel like in a state of panic and distress for that, such is his love of WFMU. And so it's not like it can't happen to a person. So as I imagine those things, that was, in my mind, all those things that can happen, I want to go through. I've been watching, as you know, some of the old Star Treks because someone must have asked me to. I just do things. That's why I think maybe I'm a robot, because I'm highly suggestible. It's probably just the ADHD, but someone says, you should watch, blah, 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 like, okay, all of them? And that's what happens. So I'm doing that. And they have this place called the holodeck. Now, sometimes they'll explain it. They're using it the way the old Star Trek used to use the, we're going to the Western planet or gangster planet. But they gave up on that and they go, let's just have a room. That's so tedious. Can't we just have a room that turns into stuff? Yes. So they have this place that's, you know, highly unlikely even given their technology. But everybody suspends their disbelief because it's just a necessary vehicle. But it's a lovely analogy for what? I don't know, man. But I use it for to imagination. You know, submerge. So you're so, they have immersive theater. Now, some of immersive theater, I'm going to come back to the holodeck. Some immersive theater is like the one Sleep No More or something at the McKittrick Hotel where you go and you watch this thing unfold in a building and you kind of follow around as a silent masked audience member. And other things are like, my favorite thing is like being called up on stage to do a part in Uncle Vanya and not knowing any of the lines. I go, come on up, we're having, Hardy's coming up now, gonna be Vanya. I don't even know. That's immersive. That's lovely. That's the kind of, I like to blur the lines between what is theater. We all do that. That's just called going to a party. Everybody's doing a part anyway. They're just like, people think they invented that, like, so-and-so's wedding is another one. It was so you're at a wedding, you're like a guest at a wedding, and some of the people at the wedding and the couple are actors. Well, that's just a wedding, except now you're being charged to go, which I think is a trend now anyway in weddings, you know. Have you got your ticket? Mark the date. That's what they're like anyway. And so to defray the cost, we're going to go ahead and sell tickets. Is that all right? It's a cash bar. That's because they outlawed potlatch. So this is all a long story. But I'm getting back to the holodeck. Oh, bless your heart. I know you worry about me. So I'm worried that you're going to wander off trying to make a point so badly you will fall off a cliff. And I go, no, the world is round. You always come up on behind yourself. That's the beautiful thing. You walk off in any direction long enough and you will sneak up on yourself. And that's a beautiful thing. So, I'm right where I left me. And it also, all points lead back to where you are now, so there's no point to go anywhere, just like George Harrison said. You can stay here and travel. As we use our imaginations and we enter now into the holodeck, we must think about where do we want to go? What can we imagine ourselves doing something in the future? And like I said, I used it to rehearse. You know, what is this going to be like to perform in front of people? What's the worst case scenario? I've gotten to the point, you probably are like this too, where my self-torture's gotten, I just require so little. So, like, mild disappointment, I can hurt myself with that. Like, you saw my show and you say, it wasn't as funny or good. What I can do with that is I take that rather innocuous thing, it's even kind of vaporous, and I can press it until it's like hard as a diamond and sharp as a knife. And then I cut myself with it repeatedly. And you say, oh no, I'm afraid to even say anything to you. That's on me. I'm going to solve that so that you don't have to go through that. You don't want to have to feel like you're killing the artist because they didn't properly prepare for the art battle. So it is like rehearsing a war or something. I always thought that. And did you think that in college? I go, do you want to play Risk? And you go, why are they teaching me international warfare strategy? Am I being groomed to be one of the world generals and commanders of, or is that my roommate? That was always strange. I just thought, why are we learning to do these skills? I needed games that helped me with social interactions. I think like that would be easier. What's the really thing we gotta get? I guess the best thing to do is not. There's a weird thing to say, I don't care what people think. Well, that's not the solution. You know, because you can get there and be awful, you know? So that's not where you really want to be. It's like, I don't care about people. I think what you want is I want to let not being cared about not hurt me. So now you can acclimate yourself to that. So see it like this. This is what I've done, and be like, you should be like me, because everything goes smoothly for me, because I am smooth jazz personified as a living person. No, I'm being silly. This is what it's like to me. Let's say someone is like not as into you as you'd like, maybe as an audience, maybe as a friend or anything like that. Consider it an ice bath, bracing and not really harmful, just shocking to the system, uncomfortable to the point that if you were immature, you might cry. Like if you put a baby in an ice bath. See, a baby, here's the difference between a baby and Andrew Huberman. And it isn't huge. So you put a baby into one like that, baby will scream and cry. But the person, the Pew Scholar, is you submerge in the ice and they go, this is for a reason. This will benefit me. And that does help you to suppress some of your natural reaction to that, which would be horror and something akin to pain. But it's not really that. It's something that you can master, being chilled, chilled. You can survive being chilled out without feeling, without resorting to fire. Just let yourself be chill. See, a lot of people counter the chill with, oh, fire, that guy, oh, yeah, I met that guy. Fire him, FF. So, no, you don't have to do that. You go, it was bracing. I liked it. I liked meeting that person. They closed my pores. It was so cold. Look, I can see my breath. I was talking to them. I started seeing my breath. But I was like, all right, that's all right. And I don't mind. And things change. Some you can be misperceived. I've been on the radio, a long time. And so you experience being liked and unliked by people who you never meet. Isn't that exquisite? It's like you have friendships that run some sort of natural course, but you never got to participate. It's interesting. It's like, I wish we had met so that we could really have a reason not to like each other anymore. It's so funny. But it does happen. And it's interesting to me, and it just, it doesn't make me anything, neither resentful or, I get to see something in myself. I go, I wonder how much of that I've done. How much of that did I do? Here's another thing about the imagination, is that if you are going to have a play, so I'm going to rehearse something. I've got to do a meeting. I got to show up. Let's pick a town.
Pick my town, Hardy.
What town are you in?
I'm Chicago, Illinois.
Okay, you're in Chicago, Illinois. I got to go to Chicago, Illinois.
How to say Chicago?
I did. That's fun. It's nice to hear your town's name. So let's say you got to go to Chicago and do a...
Hardy, pick Expo.
Expo.
I go to Expos.
So you're going to Expo in Chicago where you have to do a presentation.
Presentation at the Expo Center.
I don't know if that is a place.
Okay.
So you've got to go there and do a presentation at the Expo place. And you want to sort of rehearse it mentally. Now, who's going to be there, right?
My Bidwist Club.
Your Bidwist Club. And you know who's in that. So when you start to imagine it, you put your friends and acquaintances in the play. You cast it. You cast it like it's a play at the Burt Reynolds Dinner Theater in Jupiter, Florida. Let's go back now, shall we, to the early 1980s. It's the Jupiter, Burt Reynolds Dinner Theater and acting school. Your professors are Burt Reynolds, Charles Nelson Reilly, and others. And you are performing
a play called I Have to Go Do a Presentation at the Chicago Expo Thing for Work.
Bidwist Club.
For Bidwist Club. And so I imagine all the people there. Now, when you put them in there, you're going to have them saying things. And you have them saying things based on your perception of them, your fears of them. But they're not writing their own lines. You're writing them. You have them saying things to you that they have not said. Now, consider that maybe other people are doing this. And you've got everybody's head is this off-Broadway theater, and you are in, you don't even know what productions you're in. You don't know how they're doing. You don't know what you're being directed to say. You don't know what part you're playing. And we can all do that to one another. And so these wonderful things that we have in our head that allow us to imagine and navigate the future, and I guess they're there because evolution, it does help you to survive, to have paranoid fantasies about threats to your existence. It really does. It helps you plan. It's what produces the Three Little Pigs. It's that in a nutshell. So it allows you to accumulate that kind of survival information by going through scenarios. Just keep in mind that you are populating the scenarios with real people who are also fooled into thinking that they are the main character in this show of consciousness. And just understand that consciousness is a cruel thing, emergent property, that just makes us insufferable a-holes. All of us. It can't be. It makes, you know why? Because if you get into a debate with somebody about consciousness, you can tell as people start to think they're special, they really start believing that there's some sort of appendage of God, and that there's some omniscience seeing through. That's what consciousness is, some kind of manifestation of a greater awareness, right? Instead of like a bug that just thinks it's emperor. And we can see it in other things, just not in ourselves, you know. Oh, sad little insect. It thinks it's something. Squish. Oh, my word. Are you saying I'm but a bug? You are a butt bug? Is there such a thing? I don't know. Stop washing and see. Let's see. There's some people, the crusty folk, that turn their bodies into what some every 20th neighbor does with their yard. So I'm just going to let it go back to nature, and so things can live in it. And it is wonderful. And they can. But you know, I've told you about this, that the human body hair has a Bering Strait evolutionary incident that caused pubic lice and head lice to speciate. Do you know about this? It's why Alaskans and Russians are different. Anyway, we'll get into that, but that the hair land bridge was broken. I bet you don't believe me. I mean, you'll look it up. I think people are starting to go, occasionally Hardy says something that's not untrue. Yes, it's just, it's context. You know, the truth doesn't matter if you just put it in the middle of something. If we were on a desert island and we know we're stuck there forever, and I whip out like a gold brick, what's it worth? What's it worth? Is that rhetorical? It is rhetorical, but I ask it so many times you think maybe I want you to answer. I'm waiting for you to answer, and then I'm gonna yell it's rhetorical just because I wanted to mess with you. No, I don't do that. Oh, bless you. I'm much less likely to do that with friends now. I've gotten sappier and more nurturing. I've tried to counteract it with smelling badly or something. Because I don't want to be a complete sap, you know. But I also want to, tired of sort of needlessly leveling the playing field of
people's emotions. You say, you know how we do that to one another? People regulate. They seem too happy. Or they seem too proud of themselves. I think I'm going to help them even things out. And it's kind of like, you know, childish sibling behavior or something. And we always think it's good, you know. It keeps us honest. But it doesn't. It's just, it makes everybody feel lesser. It doesn't really help. There's something in between puffing people up, you know, unnecessarily or falsely and cutting them down to keep them humble somehow in the face of continued success. I don't know how else to put it.
Oh, you put it pretty well.
Oh, bless you. You're so kind to me. How do you know? See, right there, you want to counteract me, don't you? That's a weird thing. You know, there's two reactions people have to self-praise. They got to figure out, why is that person praising themselves? Usually I'm being ironic, but not self-deprecating. Does that make any sense? Because I wouldn't sit here and puff myself up. I realize, you know, who I am. At the same point, I realize that a lot of times people putting themselves down is the opposite of what you see is actually going on. You know, there is a way of, you know, the cry for help sometimes. I've done it countless times. I'm worthless. I'm not, but please someone contradict me. That kind of thing. And then the more you do it, then you do feel worthless. You go, maybe I am worthless because I keep saying I am, and, you know, and everybody's sort of rolling their eyes. But that's not it. It's just that you're in a trap. You know, you're just in a, got to just step briefly outside of it and go, you know, this really is a self-solvable problem. Oh, my goodness. How can that be? Oh, it can be. And come with me. I'm not going to have some very dangerous esoteric wisdom to share with you, but I've ever so briefly forgotten what it is. It'll come back to me. But that's the way it is with secret mystical concepts, is you can't hold on to them for very long. They pop in and out of your head. That's so you don't inappropriately share them. You know how mad they got at Bruce Lee? Go, Bruce Lee's sharing the secret kung fu system that doesn't work. Yeah, stop him now. Everybody will learn how to be kung fu charlatans. And then, I'm not saying he was, I'm just, there's an industry, you know, of secret stuff. You know, when the world was a different place, you could make money off of secret stuff that wasn't really particularly secret. And no one wants that. No one wants their racket ruined. That's a good tip. Y'all, I don't think young people are getting that enough. Everybody's going to push back against getting their racket ruined. It's just basically that simple. For instance, cars, the car fossil fuel conspiracy. I mean, it's just they went all in, right? So it's a racket, and nobody is going to want you to bust their racket, even though it's illogical and dangerous and everything like that. And that just goes right down to the personal level. So everybody is a little, some kind of weird industry that actually secretly is ruining things if they don't change. And what is it? We all react to it. Our art is all the Magnificent Ambersons.
What are you talking about?
That is a novel that reacted against the way the car culture was ruining things in America right after the turn of the century. And then it was a film by Orson Welles that was ruined by, it was taken out of his hands at the last moment and re-edited to have a happy ending. And that's, why is that? There you go. The evidence of it is right in that incident. My friends, understand, how do I get outside of that trap? How do I change things, Hardy White? Oh, I don't know. I'm the wrong radio show for that. You are here. This is the Should I Abandon My Imagination radio show. So that's a hot take.
Well, I just want to present both sides. I'm not anti-intellectual, you know. But sometimes people are imagining the wrong things, like the future people imagine. Sometimes they're oppressive and horrible. Or the imagined future in some sci-fi is terribly militaristic and authoritarian. I think this is weird. They're all cooperating. Is that why there's uniforms? Because that's disconcerting to me. Then things like that, you know. So imagination and all that. Paranoid prediction of the future that we want to come true. I remember reading essays, you know, be like, oh, when I was a kid in the 60s and 70s, I thought they were going to be flying cars and everything. Why aren't there flying cars? And I think, oh, my God, for the love of God, I'm glad there's not flying cars. Think for 2 seconds. It wouldn't be the Jetsons. Good God. Flying cars. It's bad enough they're rolling around on the ground.
Yeah, I want them in the air, too, and up on my top of my house and in the trees and everywhere.
My goodness. Think for 2 seconds. No, no, no. No flying cars. Thank you very much. Bless you. I was hoping for some, you know, more utopian. They take, I guess utopias aren't great. As a kid, I wanted to do all my book reports on failed American utopias. What kind of kid were you? Well, I was weird, you know. I bet you know me. And, no, I don't. I know, right? I don't know myself. But I did have an interest in people turning to religions or cults or organized group, like group of other like-minded people as a way of solving their question of what the meaning of life is. And I was very interested in that. So do they have anything in common? And that was my search. And I answered that question. And now I've moved on to another question, and it has to do with just like, what's a good sandwich? What makes a good sandwich? That kind of thing. And a lot of people don't do that. They go, oh, I've searched for enlightenment, and now I feel like I found it, but I'll keep looking. And go, probably not. You probably found it. Just like, maybe it was underwhelming, but like, move on. Now get a hobby. So I looked in these communities of so-called utopians, and a friend is visiting town. I was going to take him to the Shaker Village because, you know, they're considered the kind of a utopian community, but just really like a community. Well, they died out because they didn't reproduce. No, they died out. That doesn't make any sense. You don't have to, you know. They died out because they're all gays. There's no gay people. You can be a Shaker. Nobody's holding a gun to your head. You don't have to be second generation Shaker. It died out because it's a lifestyle that people did not end up enjoying or really fulfilling them spiritually, I think. You know, for all we know, Baptists might not be doing it. I don't know. People just joining off the street. But you can do it that way. A lot of people aren't second generation anything. So it isn't really that they, you know, you don't have to be. That's true for some authoritarian religions or ones, you know, that. But a lot of cults you just join because they're not your family. Make sure it's not a suicide cult. If it's a benign one, it ends up being just kind of fun. But if it's just like, you know, tonight we're all going to eat applesauce, don't do it. But if really what's going on is that there's some sort of like charismatic figure and they've come up with a really imaginative mythology and you're sort of all on the same page with a lot of other like-minded people and they seem to like you a priori, you don't have to like, it's like, are you unconditionally accepting me? Yes, we've already decided to do that. Then, you know, that's not a bad situation, right? And then you're just like, oh, please, you know, don't go off, don't march into a pit so that I have to follow you. A lot of times, I mean, the worst is awful. Best case scenario, your guru just dies and you keep the mummified body around in a modest house in suburban Los Angeles. For a little while, money runs out, go back to the Midwest, whatever. go back to doing some editing. I don't know. You know, I don't know the arc of your life. It's because you can imagine all this, though. Oh, man, do you do that, Hardy? Imagine you joined a cult or something? I don't know. Now I will. I just put that thought in my head. Oh, my goodness, no. I've been, you know, it's there's an allure to be accepted, isn't there? Especially if we come from a background where it's not. I was always jealous of people that had a real good, strong family identity or regional identity. That'd be great. I'd settle for that, you know, to love your city so much. You know, it's all about Buffalo for me, you know, that kind of thing. Okay, or your family, you know, we're just real big on family. And I've been to those big family, you know, go to those reunions, there's people that go, yeah, bam, family's important to us, we're a big family. And most of them, oh, they're all, you know, making each other miserable. And you wonder what the, they're just clinging to it, though. A lot of times you think, this is what's causing your misery. This is wonderful. And they have pictures up of the people who caused it. They'll be like, this is the great-grandparents who started all this psychosis. And because God love, you know, you buy a few generations, you're not really related to, like, your second cousin's children or something, to be honest with you. You're not even really related to your fifth great-grandparents by some point, you know. You're going to have very little in common with them. So I guess what I'm saying is your Chicago Bidwist Club is probably more your family. I feel like that with my Starship crew. Also, any play I'm in, I go feel like, even if it runs a day or two, I'm like, we're all, I feel like I'm family with y'all. Which is why I never came on to anybody. So now that the play's closing, no, it doesn't work that way. But I feel like, but they always want to make you, work always wants to make you family. I go, no, don't, you're not fooling me. We're not family. You are not, your boss is not, maybe stepdad, you know, but nothing else. Not, definitely not family. Some endeavors do feel like that, though. And sometimes they have to. Or else everybody on the submarine is not going to work together. Could you imagine that? You know, somebody's got a really important job in the submarine, go like, I don't know who you people are. You're not, I don't know, you people. That's what they, that's the last thing, you know. Okay, hey, torpedo guy, you ready? I don't know, are you people? And they go, oh, we're sunk. We just got you peopled by ants and so-and-so. I'm going to keep a little, this is something, hey, radio guy. Tip, I'm going to keep a list of fake surnames to use so I don't have to say Hoosiewat or so-and-so or something like that. I'm going to hear from the Hoosiewat family. Dear Hardy White, you so amusingly use the word Hoosiewat.
We use that. That's a euphemism for genitalia in our family.
No, it's a surname. It's a German surname. That did come up with an uncle. What was the... He had... I had a colorful, oh, his nose wasn't colorful, actually. He was all dressed in gray all the time. And, but I adored him. This was a New Jersey, I say this because he is a New Jersey uncle. And you, that's an, is that like Dutch uncle? Is that an expression? It is. My New Jersey uncle, my Hardy White. My New Jersey uncle lived in Haddonfield, but worked in Camden for Campbell Soup Company. He ordered shoes from a catalog and went to sleep with the television on. He wore white shirts tucked into gray pants every day. And he told me that in his closet there were people living, namely a man named Mr. Hovey Stover. And I thought about that for a long time, and I thought about the Hovey Stovers and just Mr. Hovey Stover. Just living in that closet there. And years later, I thought, is that his lover? But I don't know who that was. I think he's just, you know how people tell stories to kids? They think they like them. You know, there's a demon living in the closet. I love it. I tease the kids when they come over. I said, there's an ogre under that couch who's going to eat your hands. The kids love it. They scream in delight. But he wasn't trying to do that. He wasn't really trying to frighten me. He knew I wasn't afraid of him, but they did live in an old, rather old house that was kind of, you know, those 20s craftsmen, you know, by the 70s, terrifying. So that's so funny because now I'm old enough to live in a house that I could have been built when I was built after I was born. It's still old and it smells funny, just like me. Oh, we are houses. If you've been listening to this radio show for long enough, you will notice that I mention houses an awful lot. That there is a character named Don Bourgeois-Z who is a real estate agent who became a house. And I will speak a lot about houses in your brain, or imagine right now we are in a house going from one room to another. And you will find that when you visualize things, that rooms are a little easier than wide open spaces. If I were to ask you to make a visual representation of a city or a field or something, I'm pretty confident that you would confine it to sort of an area that could fit in a Universal Studios soundstage. That is, rather large, but with a very defined horizon. When we talk about houses, and I say walk into a room that's empty, it is both confined and infinite, because we can just link up those rooms, thought to thought, to make a bigger thing that's complex and that begins to show us how things are related through time, and how chaotic that makes your memories and the constructions of things. What are you talking about? Okay, imagine this. You're making memories, right? But you're making memories, not all at once, and your brain doesn't know what your future memories are going to be. So you're sort of linking things up. So every time it happens, you relate it to something that's already happened. You sort of stick it in a room, or you classify it, and then you link up all these rooms. So there's no real hallway. There are these rooms that link up that you have to pass through to get to the next thing. And they're all kind of put together in this kind of scattershot way. And it feels very labyrinthine, or like an old house where you don't know where each room goes or what's in it. Oh, my goodness, this is why we often remain a mystery to ourselves, and always shall. So I find it interesting to sort of see who the now me is. Who's harder right now? Because if I look back, I'm going to get a very inaccurate view of what happened, who I was, because I had a different information when I made those decisions. There were rooms that did not yet exist. How can I judge myself by that? Well, you never even tried to go into the game room. There was no game room yet. And so I do not look to the past to see who I am. I suppose there might be some evidence there. I'm a cigarette now me. Who's the now me? And, I can't even anticipate future who I could be. Maybe no one. Now that I'm getting to the age where friends are dropping dead, there's little peaks and valleys. If you're in the insurance business, you know there's little age time frames that I don't know how that works. I think it's related to comet activity or something. Yeah, you know, planets line up. They take all the 57-year-olds. That, you know, made me realize, oh, my goodness, everybody was sort of making plans, and it's good to make plans. But, yeah, you don't want to live in some time when you're not in. That happened to Yar in Star Trek. There was on, I think it was on Tomorrow's Enterprise. You know, she'd already been killed in, like, season one or something like that. Season three, she's back again. And Guinan's like, you're not supposed to be here. You're already dead. And Tasha Yar's like, I don't want to live in some time where I'm already dead. If I'm dead in the future, I don't want to be here. I want to go back to, I don't know how this works. Oh, time travel. It's very complicated. There's nothing more unsatisfying by someone telling you you're already doing it. You're already time traveling for the future. That's not the kind I want to do. Obviously, I want to go see Romans or something. I want some Doctor Who quality time. Obvious. obvious time travel. I go into machine. I type in a year based on my religious tradition. Numbers, arbitrary numbers based on when I think God lived in a town. And then we go to a place. Do I have to put the place into? Yes, I put the place name in. I put my name for that place in the machine. And then we go there. So I'd be like, Italy. Italy in like, Italy in, and I'd say it like that. Machine. Time machine.
Yes.
Italy, 15th century.
What's that mean?
You figure it out. So,
then I gotta tell you, who's Jesus? Where was it? What's that have to do with the year? Psh.
He suggested, oh, I'm not gonna go into this, but you know how they do on, they do Captain's Log, star date, and they do the star date. And that's way more accurate. But then with the star date, no one ever has a birthday. Isn't that sad? Because the birthday is like, how many times around the sun? Well, if you're not ever going around the sun, you don't ever have a birthday. How many years do people live? Absurd question. You're on the star thing. They're like, oh, you know, Mr. Macaque is still alive, and he's like 200. Well, they don't know. They don't know how long they've been on there. Also, they're bopping around. So, bop near this black hole. Let's bop around here and everything. Time could have slowed down relative to others. They don't even know. They don't know how old they are. They're not going around the sun or anything. They're not measuring time. Yes, they're aging, but I wonder if they even notice it. They might not even notice. And that's a wonderful, what a wonderful way to live is that as an amnesiac spaceman. And don't we all really crave that? Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad that I hope it's, I know it's not late at night. Well, if you're listening on the archives, it is. But, I mean, if you're listening to the broadcast, it's still light out. Maybe you're driving home from work even. So every time I ask you to close your eyes, I know I'm taking a terrible risk. You don't all have the self-driving cars. Some of you are on public transport. I've asked you to close your eyes. You've gone to sleep. You wake up very far. I mean, when that happens in New York City, good, my goodness, you could wake up in Georgia. And does it go that far? If you don't get off, oh my God, it's crazy, you know? I got on and got on the wrong train. Name a train. I don't know the trains. Just a letter or number. Zed. I got on the Zed line, and I didn't know the Zed line after a certain hour only goes to Dothan. So I got on it and I'm in the deep south. Crazy. Just nobody on there. Just me. I shouldn't just me and CeeLo. And on there I'm going, something's up. And down there in the south, whatever, dirty south. Oh, bless you. I hope you're taking this ride with me. I love it that we get to travel together like this. You know, I would love to be, I don't know what generation I'm in, but I'd love to be I know I'm not the voice of it because there's so many other people my age whose voices are more prevalent. Broadcasters, and I'm trying to think of one, I can't, but I know they're out there and you know them better than I because I should be listening. It's like asking, listening to a violin player, you go, who's your favorite violinist? And they go, honestly, God, I don't listen to much violin music. And that's me. I'd be better if I listened to, I don't even listen to people do this. And that has been a mistake I have been making for decades. You know, so even here's the genius. If I'm stealing somebody's stuff, what is that parallel evolution stuff called? We're just that, I just came up with it. We probably just stole it from the same person in the past. But I haven't listened to, I don't listen to them. I should. I really should. I think a lot of it would discourage me. There's a lot. I know there's probably still a lot of radio that's people have got opinions or they're talking about something very specific. And they may have shifted their opinions from human rights to superheroes and stuff like that. That's fine, too. And, you know, but do I explicitly ever talk about, well, I don't want the, I like the show to be evergreen. And when I say that, I mean by thousands of years in either direction. So I try not to mention anything. However, you will notice that there is a dominant philosophy.
What is it?
Just keep noticing. Is it gentle, ultimately? Yes. Is it scarier than you think? Yes. Because I think real freedom is terrifying. I think if you're really to liberate your mind, you'd scream 24 hours a day and never sleep. And, but, you know, the thing is that it can be mitigated with so much just kindness and everything. There is a way of not worsening people's lives. And that is probably where I'm coming down on, is the not harming thing. I'd love to do that. I'd love to not cause harm. At the same time, there's so many I love and care about, and I don't want them to be harmed. So I try to equip them with ways of surviving. And there's some wacky things you have to do to survive and adjust, I think. And what do you mean by surviving, my friend? You know what I mean. What? You know what I mean. What? I don't know. I hope you know what I mean. Oh, you know what I mean. You know, just staying alive is a lot harder than you think. Some of it is just you instinctively, you shifted towards something else like your work deadline. But your work deadline really means your ability to eat deadline. And you can't think about that every second of the day, you know. You've got to both worry enough to survive, but not so much that you won't be able to eat this food that you're earning. Could it be another way? Oh, maybe. But I do know this. We'll never get there through some obvious thing or through reason. I know that. I've seen there's too many. Like, let's say we really want to transform our culture and society and the way we see one another. I'm telling you. It's like Ocean's 11 or something. If we're breaking into something, this place, this casino, this culture, these entrenched values, there are security system upon security system. And if you, the more obvious you come at this place, the more alarms you set off, the more troops you send out, this is requires trickery, undermining, deception, confusion, and thinking so far outside the box that you're back inside the box because it's a tesseract. And I don't even know how that happened, but there we are. And we're in and out at the same time. I'm outside it too. How many cats? I'm a live cat. I'm a dead cat. And I'm also the Apostle Peter and Abe Vigoda, and there's one other. It's some kind of brine shrimp. It isn't a brine shrimp, but it's very small. I don't know. Come in and bless you. I know that a lot of times that you can get so desperate that you say, I'd do anything. I just, it's hard to tell me what to do. I just need direction. And I say, oh, what direction's where? And you go, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going. Well, therefore, you have no problem. If you don't know where you're going, you don't need a map. So that's beautiful. Well, I don't know where I'm supposed to go. All of this is pointing to you don't have to. And there's nothing to figure out. Oh, bless you. But what? Don't worry about it. But am I? No, you're fine. But should I? I mean, I feel in my life. No, you're all right. But I just regret that. No, stop. I love you. You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Thank you for listening. I'll see you again next week.
So